Okay, good morning, everyone. It is an incredible zechus to be here with all of you this morning. I'm not sure. I'm having some technical difficulties on my end, so I'm not sure why I can't hear all of you. But okay, Baruch Hashem, hopefully you can hear me. So let's begin. So I'd like to continue our journey in Meretz Hashem in Perek Aleph, and still the first chapter of Tehillim, making our way a little bit through this capital. As I think, as we've begun to see, the lessons of this particular chapter are so profound and so incredibly overwhelming that although we studied it together many years ago, it behooves us to go back a little bit and to review and to try to gain even a deeper level of understanding. So just to reorient ourselves a bit, we've spent the last couple of weeks focusing on the idea of Ashrei. Sorry, just making sure everything is working on my end here. We spent the last couple of weeks focusing on Ashrei. And in our Ashrei, David HaMelech has been teaching us the concept of what it means to lead a praiseworthy life. How does a person become an Ashrei individual? How do I lead an Ashrei life? So we spent the last 4 weeks discussing the different parts of Pasuk Aleph. Lo halach ba'asas rishoim, ubederech hatoim lo amad, ubemoshav leitzim lo yashav, and the respective meanings and life profundities of those respective phrases. Today, I'd like to draw your attention to Pasuk Beis. We're going to focus just on one Pasuk today. So if you take a look at number one on your sheet, David HaMelech says, Ki im betoras Hashem cheftzo. But we'll just use the English translation that is here. But his desire is in the law of the Lord, the Torah. His desire is in the Torah of Hashem. And in his law, he meditates day and night. So let's analyze a little bit what this means. So if you look at the Radak in the Malbim, in sources 2 and 3, pretty much highlight the same basic yisod, which is as follows. The Radak writes, Kim betoras Hashem cheftzo, Amar, Im sar midarach hara velo asa tov, hine lo hishlim ma'aseyu velo yomru alav ashrav. So the Radak makes an amazing observation, and the Malbim writes, we're going to see essentially the same idea, which is, it's interesting, I think we noted this idea in our first shir, that when David HaMelech begins to speak about Ashrei, Ashrei Aish, I want to lead an Ashrei life. So how does one lead an Ashrei life in the view of David HaMelech? So remember again, David HaMelech begins by talking about the things you should not do. Don't walk here. Don't stand here. Don't sit there. David HaMelech highlights to us the pitfalls of existence and the things we need to avoid. Comes along the Radak, and the Radak says, one second, but you should not think that the pathway to Ashrei is paved only by avoiding negative things. That's not enough. Avoidance of the negative is exceptionally important and a necessary component. But avoidance of the negative is only one part of creating an Ashrei life. In order to be an Ashrei individual, a praiseworthy individual, lead a praiseworthy life, you must also engage in meaningful, dynamic activity. And that says the Radak, that's the meaning. Kim b'toras Hashem chefzo uvesorasa yoge. It's true. You have to avoid the negative things. You have to avoid the pitfalls. You have to try to sidestep the challenges. But ultimately, again, avoidance of that which is negative is only part of the picture. You also must engage in positive, dynamic activity. The Radak goes on in number two. He says, v'chin amar. This is what David HaMelech means when he writes in Tillim a little bit later on. Sur meira v'yaseh tov. Avoid evil and engage in good. So again, the Radak goes on, he gives other examples of this. So he says, the Radak, and this is actually very interesting, because I think what we're going to see as we continue on in this capital, and I think you've already seen it, because this is a little bit of a reverse angle of Tehillim, right? We've done, you know, close to 70 chapters of Tehillim. Now we're going back to Aleph. And I'm sure what many of you have discovered is, many of the themes that we have covered in the 70 chapters we have learned are all contained in Capital Aleph. It is the great secret of the first chapter of Tehillim that it almost contains a blueprint for the rest of the Sefer. And in this manner, says the Radak, David HaMelech, we'll see later on in chapter 34, Capital Lamed Dalet, Sur Meira V'Yaseh Tov. One must avoid evil, but then engage or perpetrate good. King David is giving us a model for life. You have to identify the negative things and avoid them. That's Sur Meira. That's Pasuk Aleph in capital Tehil, in capital Aleph. Ashrei Ish, what's the first step in Ashrei? Sur Meira. Lo halach batzas rishoim, o bederech hatoim lo amad, o b'moshav leyotzim lo yoshav. Don't walk here, don't stand there, don't sit here. Those are all the things that you should avoid. But avoidance of evil is the first step. Then in Pasuk Beis is the Aseh Tov, is the positive dynamic activity. A person should desire the law, the Torah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and ultimately, again, meditate in Torah day and night. The Malbim in number 3 says basically the same idea. Ki'im ulam lo dai b'menias hara levad. In life, it is not enough to avoid engaging in negative activity. Ki mitnaya usher. Because if you want Ashrei, this is Osher with an Aleph, not an Ayin, right? Osher with an Ayin is richness, being rich, wealthy. Osher with an Aleph is Ashrei. If you want an Ashrei life, Shi'aseh Tov. Ultimately, again, you have to go ahead and do good. So this is the first part of the Malbim. So far, the Rav Dr. Lamal really highlighting the same idea, which, again, understand the profundity of what they're trying to express. They're trying to go ahead and lobby against what we'll call the pariv mindset in life. What's the pariv mindset? The pariv mindset is, as long as I'm not mochiks, as long as I'm not fleshiks, right? As long as at the end of the day, I'm not a rasha. Am I doing anything bad? I'm not doing anything bad, right? Or essentially, my spirituality is pariv. I'm okay. I'm okay the way that I am. I'm not engaging in anything terrible. I'm not doing anything bad, and therefore, I'm okay. So the truth is, there is some level of wisdom to that, because at the end of the day, even King David says the first step to Ashrei is sidestepping negativity. But sidestepping negativity or avoidance of sin only gets you so far. One's true spiritual identity only materializes if one subsequently goes ahead and also engages in positive dynamic activity. So avoidance of sin is a great first step, but that must be accompanied then by positive dynamic engagement in good deeds. That's Pasuk Beis. So Pasuk Aleph is Sur Meira, avoid evil. Pasuk Beis is Aseh Tov, engage actively, ultimately again in the commission of good. Now the Malbim goes on, he says something very interesting. He says, if you look at number 3, he says, V'lo she'yaseh tov nemuse levad, kafilosifim shebado datos liatzmam, rak sheyishmor toras Hashem umitzvosav, v'gamber shemitnas yaseh tov. So this is actually very interesting. So the Malbim says, however, when we speak about doing good, doing good can't just be something that you philosophize about. In other words, it's interesting, this is not our topic for now, but Judaism is not like a very philosophical religion. Now you'll say to yourself, one second, but there are so many volumes of Jewish philosophy. So remember again, Jewish philosophy, like the Rambam first started writing Jewish philosophy, it was really in response to the fact that Islam was putting out much philosophy as well. So that without a Jewish, library of philosophy, people are going to be drawn to other philosophical things. Judaism is not really focused on philosophy for one simple reason. Generally, the only thing philosophy creates is philosophers, right? And the only thing that philosophers really create is more philosophy. Judaism is an actional religion. Do, 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 do. Grow. Let's not talk about what we're going to do. Let's not philosophize what we're going to do. Because remember, again, you can philosophize from here until tomorrow. What does God mean? What does God know? How do I have free choice? How do I not have free choice? Right? Why do bad things happen to good people? These are all legitimate philosophical points. And you could philosophize over them for a lifetime. But yet at the end of the day, it's not going to get you anywhere. So Judaism says that it's an incredible thing. It's okay to question. It's okay to philosophize. It's okay to be bothered by certain things. It's okay to not have certain, but at a certain point in time, you have to move on. You got to move on and you got to do. That's what Judaism, it's the beauty of Yiddishkeit, is it is an actional religion. We do, even the way we daven, right? Even when we daven together as a collective, it's each individual is active on their own. We are dynamic, active religions. It says about something amazing. When it comes to the commission of good, understand the good that we're talking about is active good. Active good. Good, see, what the Malbim is addressing is, it's not enough to have a good heart. A good heart is fantastic. A good heart is very beautiful. But a good heart that does nothing, a good heart that does nothing, a good heart that doesn't produce, I mean, it might be a good heart in the abstract, but what good is that heart actually doing for you if it doesn't create results? And we'll, by the way, we'll see this concept play out over the course of the rest of the kapitel, where David HaMelech seeks out dynamic activity. So whereas the Radak says that Pasuk Beis, verse 2, which we're focusing on today, Kim Betaras Hashem Chefzo, Uvisorosei Yogiyaga Yomav Alayla, is teaching us that to be an Ashrei individual, avoidance of evil is the first step. But then the necessary follow-up step is to engage in positive dynamic activity. The Malbim then comes along and reinforces that and says, yes, activity, activity, activity. It is not enough to think good thoughts. It is not enough to have positive emotions. It is not enough to have a good feeling about things. Judaism is all about action. Now you understand, by the way, that the incredible dialectic in Yiddishkeit is, you see people often equate actions with results. So Judaism is an actionally centric religion, but yet at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not gauge our success by results. In fact, if you take a look at number 4, the Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah gleans an incredible lesson from this pasuk. V'amar Rava, b'tchila nikreis al shmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, u'lebasof al shmo shene'emar, b'toras Hashem cheftzo, u'v'sarasei yehegeh, Yomam Valayla. So the Gemara makes it a startling observation. If you look at the pasuk, the possessiveness of Torah changes, right? In the beginning of the verse, it's Ki'im b'Torah Hashem Cheftzo, that ultimately, again, his desire is in the Torah of God. So Torah belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's calling it the Torah of Hashem. But then it says, U'besoroso yehege yomam valayla. And in his Torah, his refers to the indice. It's interesting. In the English translation, the his is with a capital H. So it sounds like Soroso is still referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. According to the Gemara's understanding, Bisoroso Yehagia Yomav Alayla refers to the individual. The individual who desires the Torah of Hashem and toils in his Torah, his actually with a lowercase h, the individual's Torah. The Gemara says, so whose Torah is it? Is it HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah? Or is it my Torah? To which the Gemara says, yes. Before you toil, it's God's Torah. After you toil, it's your Torah. Such an incredibly beautiful idea. And if we bring all three of these approaches together, we come up with really, I think, a masterful kind of like tapestry about what David HaMelech is saying. So the Radak and the Malbim are coming along and saying that the Ashrei life, whereas the first step is, yes, avoidance of evil and avoidance of negativity, at the end of the day, avoidance of evil, avoidance of negativity gets you only so far. To truly lead an Ashrei life, so a person has to be able to go ahead and engage in positive dynamic activity. Sur Meira is the first step, but Aseh Tov is the necessary second step. The Malbim then takes that a step further. And by the way, when you say doing good doesn't mean thinking good, feeling good, having good thoughts, having good heart, having good soul. That's all very wonderful. Actionally good. What are you doing? What are you doing? And in fact, the Gemara says, but lest you think that actionally based Yiddishkeit demands results, not true. It's the toil. It's the effort that makes all of the difference. All that Kaddish Baruch Hu asks of us is to engage in positive, dynamic activity. Now, at the end of the day, what's going to yield results? What's not going to yield results? What's going to work? What's not going to work? We all know. We often don't control the results. All that Kaddish Baruch Hu asks of us is to put in the effort in the effort. Put in the effort in the effort. That's all you have to do. And if you put in your effort, then that which starts out as HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah ultimately again becomes my Torah. So therefore, in the Ashrei life, step one, avoid evil. Sur Meira. Step two, engage in positive dynamic activity. But it has to be activity, not cardiac activity, not a good heart, not a good soul, not good feelings, not the I'm a good person. What are you doing? What are you doing? Show me your goodness manifest in your actions. But lest you think that meaningful action is only comes about when you achieve desired results, even the Pasuk itself says, Ubisora so yehageh. Yehageh means engaged, meditates, toils. You don't have to produce results, because often we don't control the results. All that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says is, give me effort. And when you put in that effort, that Torah, which was once HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, now becomes mine. It's a beautiful, beautiful. And what I quote a few over here in the Pian, the Radak and the Malbim, is pretty much the majority view when looking at this capital. This is the other side of the coin. Pasuk Aleph, again, is Sur Meira. Pasuk Beis is Ase Tov. But you know, it intrigued me a little bit because the Pasuk itself is fascinating, right? Remember again, what does David HaMelech write? You want to lead an Ashrei life? Kim betoras Hashem chefzo. If you desire Torah, ubisara so yehageh yomam valaylo. And you go ahead and you engage in Torah, right? You learn it, engage it, meditate, whatever. We'll see what it means, day and night. So it struck me, why does David HaMelech have to bring in this concept of desiring Torah? Right? Going back to what we just said before, desire is an emotion. Judaism, this is going to sound strange, but Judaism isn't an emotional religion. Now, hear this out for just a moment. What I mean, Judaism is a very emotional religion. What I mean is, Judaism, on this Chesh Baruch Hu, can't dictate our emotions. We spoke about this many times. That's why even the mitzvah of V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, to love Hashem your God, doesn't mean to mamish love Hashem, to have a feeling of love. That's great if you could do it, but that's not how the commentaries explain that mitzvah. We spoke about this many times. Rashi says, Asei Devarav Me'ava. When you do your mitzvahs, do it like you love Him. Make it look like, in an actional way, that you love Him. Or the Gemara gives other interpretations. Shame, make HaKadosh Baruch Hu beloved in the eyes of others through living the right kind of life. But generally, Torah doesn't regulate emotion, right? Think about this for just a moment. V'ahavta l're'acha kamocha. Love your fellow like you love yourself. Come on. Come on. What are you talking about? Right? I have very few people that I can actually love like myself. I'm lucky if I could love my family like myself. But now you want me to love every other Jew like I love myself? Virtually no one reaches that level. So again, remember, what does Hillel say? What does V'ahavta l're'acha kamocha mean? Madasani alecha lechavercha lo savid. What you don't want done unto you, don't do unto others. Every single time the Torah hands down an emotional mandate, the rabbis come along and say, that's not really what it means. It's coming to regulate behaviors, not regulate emotions. For one simple reason, you can't get into the business of regulating how people feel. This in general is incredibly important. You know, this is why when people, this comes all the time up in Shalom Bayis, you know, when people say, I've fallen out of love. Okay, you've fallen out of love. So what are you doing to fall back in love? So again, I understand sometimes things happen over the course of a relationship. So you've fallen out of love. Okay, so if you're going to fall out of love, sit on the couch and moan and groan about it. Don't expect anything to change. Are you ready to push yourself back into love? People fall out of love with God all of the time. It's my simcha yom, it happens. So what are you doing to fall? Meaning, so when it comes to emotions, the Torah is not big on emotions. The Torah is big on actions, which of course makes sense because the Torah Kedosha is a book of laws. It's a book of laws. It's there to regulate our behaviors with an understanding that if you regulate behaviors, emotions will come after that. So I found it very intriguing that David HaMelech speaks about Ki in Betoras Hashem Chefzo. You should desire Torah. First of all, what does that even mean? Well, why do we even have to get into that? I mean, the second part of the verse is enough. Ubisora so yehageh yomam valayla. A person should meditate, whatever that means. Person should meditate in Torah day and night. Why do you have to add in the concept of desiring Torah? What does that have to do with anything? And the truth is, again, why even delve into the realm of emotions? So we're going to develop two different approaches to this. So the Radak explains something very interesting. Radaki number 5, he doesn't ask his question, he asks a different question. He says, the David HaMelech says, Ubisara so yehageh yomam valayla, that a person should meditate or engage or learn Torah day and night. So the Radak asks a very simple question. Va'amru bidrash, v'chi efshar lagos yomam valayla, can a person learn Torah day and night? Melachto v'umnaso hechanu masayasa. Look what the Hadak writes. He says, when is a person going to work? When is a person going to work? So if I would ask that question, you could call me a shegetz, right? If I would ask, right, I would ask that question. Where's your emuna? Where's your emuna? I just want to point out, it's the Radak. It's the Radak. So it's good to know, right? So the Radak says, so now when is a person going to work? What do you mean I'm supposed to learn day and night? You have to understand something. We live in a golden age. We live in a dramatically golden age. This notion that Baruch Hashem, young men have the opportunity to learn for however long they want, a couple of years, before they're married, after they're married. Right? And by the way, I just want to point out, because we talk openly in this year, you know, and not people who are going on to become great Gidolim Batorah. Right, not people who are going on to become great manhigim, great leaders. So people who are going to learn for a couple of years and they're going to be professionals. So understand, that's a new dynamic. That is Baruch Hashem, one of the incredible byproducts of the affluent society in which we live in. I mean, one of the challenges in Eretz Yisrael is that it's a fixture of a society that doesn't have the same affluence as we have here. But understand that before Torah institutions were built up here after World War II, this concept of people en masse sitting and learning was unheard of. It was unheard of. There was your upper 1% who stayed in learning because they were going to go on to become the Rabbonim, the Dayonim, the Manhigim. Everyone else got a very basic rudimentary education, and you went out to work. That was, it's very important, because a lot of times there's a little bit of historical revisionism that, like, we like to think that, yes, the derech of Klal Yisrael was that a young man does nothing but learns until he's 23, then he gets married, and of course, again, it's understood he learns for 3 to 5 years, you know, afterwards, and of course, that's the standard. That's the standard of maybe the last 20 to 30 years. Maybe. The history of Klal Yisrael, which goes way before that, was not like that. Yes, of course, you always had people who sat and learned for their entire lives. But those are the people, again, who were considered to be exceptional Iluyim, or the people who were being groomed, ultimately, again, for leadership positions in Klal Yisrael. But the Stam guy did not do that. So just understand, that's the basis of the Radak's question. So Radak says, "Bisaraso yehege yomam balayla." So you're going to go ahead and learn day and night. So when are you going to the office? Right? When are you going to the office? When are you going to work? How are you making parnasa? How are you paying your bills? It's so beautiful. It's so lofty. It's so wonderful. David HaMelech, and by the way, I just want to point out, just so you should know, David HaMelech didn't learn day and night either. I just want to point out, he had a day job. It was called, he was king. And by the way, before he was king, he had another day job. He was a shepherd, right? And so just understand, David HaMelech was not a kolo guy. I'm sure if you would have asked David HaMelech, he would have given anything to be a kolo guy. But he would have given anything just to be a shepherd, right? But that was not his lot in life. So just understand the profundity of the Radak's question. Who has time for that? What about your parnasa? What about your job? What about your livelihood? What about, and I just want to say as an aside, I think these types of radaks are so important, because a lot of times we lose our grip in reality, and we lose our grip about what the quote-unquote normal is. And I just want to say, like, again, this is the bad part about Zoom, is it becomes a little bit of a soapbox. The good part about Zoom becomes a little bit of a soapbox. I'll just tell you, do you know how many boys there are who are stuck in yeshiva? They're stuck in yeshiva. They're not cut out for a whole day of learning. Not everybody is cut out for to sit in a beis medrash for a whole day is not a simple thing. Do you know how many boys are stuck in yeshiva? Because why? Because the system says, well, you learn until you get married, and you learn after you get married. And these boys are miserable. They're not productive. They're not really learning. They waste away, when instead what they should be doing is they should be working. Yeah, there should be some guys who are learning. There should be some guys who are working. Because a good balabas who has a productive day and is kovei iton Torah is just as holy as the guy who's sitting in the base medrash. But because you've created an expectation that, no, this is what a bachar does. A bachar learns. until he gets there. Okay, maybe we could fetch in there a little bit of college. Maybe. But even then, don't tell anyone about it. Do it, but just be, you know, let's not talk about it. Right? So we'll fetch that in. But a job, a profession, before you have to support the family? Okay, no, if somebody does that, there must be something wrong. There must be something going on. Obviously, it's a special case. So ridiculous and so false. So unequivocally false. Look what the Radak is saying. When do you work? And it's really important because, you know, we all like to speak about a lot of crises. Shidduch crises and this. There are a lot of crises that occur, and a lot of them are self-imposed because we create our own constructs, right? We create ideas of what's supposed to happen and how it's supposed to be. And a lot of times those constructs we create are totally divorced from reality. That the definition of a good boy is one who only learns and doesn't have, who came up with that? Who came up with that? And how many wonderful and special young men are locked into a system where they are not producing, where they are not thriving, where they're playing a game. They're putting on a facade. It's charades. They're acting a certain way, but they're not producing anything substantive. Whereas if they were allowed to really be who they were, they could be productive members of the community and ultimately, again, feel a feeling of success and then grow in their learning. Because then they could focus really on the learning that they could do and not be locked in a system that forces them to be a particular way that they're really not. Okay, the soapbox is done. Back to Sefer Tehillim. So now again, so the Radak says, what's going to happen? But what happens? What happens? I'm sorry, I just have to get a charger. Give me 1 second. Sorry. Too many devices to keep going at the same time. Okay, sorry about that. Good, we are back. So now again, says the Radak, at the end of the day, when are you going to work? So the Radak says something amazing. The Radak says, "Besoro so yehege yomam v'alayla," doesn't mean that you're always learning. It doesn't mean you're always learning. Rather, what does it mean? He says, if you skip down a couple of lines, he says, "Perush yomam v'alayla kol es chia panui me'eske mechiyaso bein min hayom bein min halayla." Says Radak something so beautiful. "Ubesoro so yehege yomam v'alayla" doesn't mean you're learning all day and night, but rather it means that when you have time, either by day or by night, you're engaged in Torah. See, here's what David HaMelech is saying. Do you know why, even though you're right, we normally don't like to regulate emotion. We don't want to get into emotion. But at the end of the day, David HaMelech says there's a power of desiring Torah. Because if you desire Torah, then when you have the opportunity to engage with it, you will. So the Radak says, David HaMelech is talking to anyone and everyone. He's talking to the guy in Kolom, but he's also talking to the guy who has a job. Means different things for different people. For the person, Baruch Hashem, who's zochah to live his life being kos le-beis ha-medrash, in the beis medrash, in Achinami, it means to learn day and night. And for the individual who's not in the beis medrash all the time, means when you have time. Whenever you have time. Whether it's by day or it's by night. In other words, what David HaMelech is saying is, you could see a lot about a person by how they go ahead and spend their free time. What do you do in your free time? How do you spend your time? And depending on how you spend your time says a lot about what your value system is. Because a lot of time on any given day, there are many things I have to do, and therefore I can't do the things necessarily I want to do. But when you have time, when you have free time, how do you utilize it? Because free time is a manifestation or is a display of what is really valuable to me. Now, of course, I'm not talking about the fact that, of course, during our free time, a person needs time to relax. A person needs time to recharge. As much as action and activity, dynamic activity is important, everybody needs a literal Shabbos on the seventh day, and everybody needs a Shabbos throughout the week as well. You need time to relax and to recharge. But aside from that, what do you do in your spare time? What do you do when you don't have things on your plate? if there's such a moment like that, right? What do you do ultimately, again, when you do have a moment to breathe? If you were to have an hour free, 2 hours free, how would you spend it? So David HaMelech says, a person who desires Torah will take the opportunity to engage with Torah whenever he or she has that opportunity. And again, I want to point out that when we speak about Besorah so yehegeh yomam v'layla, that in his, that's why David HaMelech uses this lashon yehegeh, which translates as meditate. Whenever we speak about Torah, and I know you know this because we've spoken this out many times, Torah is never to be simply defined in a narrow, constricted way of only Talmud Torah. Remember again, Torah is an expansive term that refers, of course, to learning, but also refers to living. Living Torah, remember again, the goal of Talmud Torah is living Torah. The goal of learning is the ability to do, the ability to live, the ability to put into action. So says David HaMelech, according to the Radak, the reason why David places an emphasis on desire. Ki im besoras Hashem chafzo, you have to desire, because when you desire something, you want it. You want it. And therefore, when you are given the opportunity to have it, you will take it. Mashenkin, if you don't desire something, then even when the opportunity presents itself, so for example, I might find history very interesting, but I don't pick up a history book every single time I have a free moment because I don't desire it. I find it interesting. I find it fascinating. If I hear something, if I learn something, if I read something, but just kind of on the, fine. But when you desire something, so says the Radak, then any opportunity you have, you grab it. That's what David HaMelech is saying, isn't the ultimate desire, isn't the ultimate goal in life, not only to learn Torah, and not only to live Torah, but to desire Torah, to desire HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, this goes back to the Rambam. The Rambam discusses the idea. The Rambam, interestingly enough, actually understands that V'ahavta Hashem Elokecha is an emotional mandate. It's fascinating. Even though you wouldn't expect the Rambam, because the Rambam, of course, is like the father of rational thinking. So yet, the Rambam understands that the Ahavtas Hashem Elokecha is actual an emotional mitzvah to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And remember again, how does the Rambam describe it? The Rambam describes it ultimately again, you have to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu the way a man loves a woman. And amazingly enough, the Rambam says that just like when a man is in love with a woman, he can't stop thinking about her, right? She's always on his mind. So the Rambam says that's the type of love, passion, and commitment that one should bring to the Ribono Shel Olam as well. So what happens? So hopefully again, you know, in a good marriage, a couple of times a day, if a husband and wife are not together, they pick up the phone, they call, or they, now maybe today they send text messages, but if you're going to send a text message, at least take the time to write out the entire sentence, right? I love you is not an lowercase I, L-U-V, and the letter U. If you truly love someone, you could take the 30 seconds, the 10 seconds it takes to actually write out the entire sentence. But again, I digress. So says the Radak, at the end of the day, David HaMelech stresses a desire for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because when you desire Torah, then ultimately, again, you'll want to have it whenever you can. Just like if you desire a person, you desire your spouse, you would desire an interaction, ultimately, again, whenever that could occur. So therefore, even though normally we are actionally focused, David HaMelech says the power of desire in our relationship with Torah, in our relationship with Hashem, that desire drives us to cling to God, to seek out Torah whenever we have the moments. Even if I'm occupied with my profession, I'm working, says the Radak, the entire day, when I have that moment, either yomam v'layla, when I have that moment, by day or by night, I'll grab that moment to learn Torah, to live Torah, to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it's something I'm desirous of. So I'll show you another approach as well. This is actually from last week's parasha, which I think is a very dramatic story. So we're all familiar with the story. Eliezer sets out to find a wife for Yitzchak. And we're familiar with the story. I'm going to just tell you this outside. So Eliezer sets out. Now, obviously, Avraham Avinu gives Eliezer very little direction, right? All he tells Eliezer is, Ki'im el mishpachti v'al beis abi. I want you to get a girl from my family. Okay, that's really it. That's really it. Even if you look at the psukim, all Avraham Avinu seems to be looking for is a girl from his family. In other words, he does not go ahead and give Eliezer really any other direction besides that, which is really quite interesting. So therefore, again, I'm sorry, this is just giving me a problem. All right, sorry, I need a technical team here to help me with these things. So in any event, so Eliezer goes and he devises his own test, right? And in Eliezer's test, the pasuk says, "V'hayohan na'ara asher omar ela hatina kadech v'yeshta." So remember again, what does Eliezer say? So Eliezer goes ahead and comes up with the following test. I'm going to go over to a girl, and I'm going to ask her for something to drink. Hatina kadech v'yeshta. Literally, now the translation is very important. Tilt your jug towards me, and I will drink. And if she says, "V'amra she'se v'gam gimalecha ashke," and if she says, "I will give to you to drink and to give your camels to drink," Osal chachto liavdechal Yitzchak. Eliezer says, "Oh, that's the girl for Yitzchak, and Hashem, I will know that you have done chesed with me." So we're familiar with this. This is the test, the chesed test that Eliezer devises for the future spouse of Yitzchak Avinu. When you look at this test, it's absolutely bizarre. Do you know how much a camel drinks? Right? On a technical level, a lot. A lot. Eliezer is coming with a bunch of camels. Rivka Imenu, right? Whatever, whether she's literally three, metaphoric, whatever it is, she's a young woman. She's a young girl. So you're going to tell me now that the expectation is that a young girl is going to give a stranger to drink and also go ahead and agree to water all of his camels. That's crazy. First of all, from where do you see that even Sari Imenu would have done such a thing like that? In other words, this is not chesed. This is not chesed. This is above and beyond. Meaning, remember, if Eliezer would have said, "I'm going to go over to her, and I'm going to ask her to give me a drink, and if she agrees to give me a drink, she's the girl for Yitzhak. I got it. Totally makes sense, because again, that's Abrahamitic. Because what did Avram Avinu do? Avram was all about chesed for total strangers. Beginning of Parashas Vayera, he's 3 days post-circumcision. He's sitting at the entranceway of his tent, looking for strangers to welcome in. The tent is open on all four sides to anyone and everyone. I got it. So you go over to Rivka. You don't know me. I don't know you. Hi, nice to meet you. Could I have a drink? If she says yes, hi Aisha. But no, that's not enough. She's got to agree to give me a drink and also to water all of my camels. What's the pshat? Doesn't make any sense. Why should that be? First of all, why would there be any expectation that any human being would go ahead? So can you imagine you see someone walking by on a hot day, right? And they're walking their dog. So you want to be a nice person, a daughter of Avraham Avinu, you run out to give them a drink. But no, it's not enough. You have to say, "By the way, you know what? Can I finish walking your dog for you? You look exhausted. Let me do a couple of laps with your German Shepherd. And you know what? I'll dog sit for the rest of the day also. Take the day off on me. After all, I'm a daughter of Avraham Avinu. That's what we do. We are all about chesed all of the time, for people, for dogs, for camels, for everyone. No such expectation like that. That's not Abrahamitic chesed." So the Beis Halevi says something absolutely amazing. I'll tell you this outside, but you could look at it inside later on as well. The Beis Halevi says something amazing. He says, Eliezer was not just looking for chesed, but he was looking for chesed with common sense. Watch how this plays out. Eliezer is going to go over to Rivka, and he's going to say, or to the girl, and he's going to say to her, now it's interesting, Eliezer doesn't simply say, "Can I have something to drink?" The wording of his request is, "Hatina kadech v'yeshte." Remember the imagery over here. They would go to the well, you would go to the well with a jug, you would fill up the water in your jug. The jug was a large receptacle. You would then bring back that jug to your home, and you would use that for all of your water needs. So Eliezer is going to say to a girl, "Can I drink from the jug?" He's asking to drink. So understand what he said. He's not just asking for a drink. He's not saying, "You know, here, I brought my own cup, right? I have my own becher. Do me a favor. Pour me a little bit of water into my becher." No. "Hatina kadech v'yeshe." I'd like to drink from the jug. So says Eliezer. Now, again, so let's say a girl comes along and she says, "Fine, no problem. You could drink from the jug. Let me ask you this. if you were a balas chesed like Rivka Minu, which I'm sure all of you are, and a strange man were to come over to you at the well, again, different times, right, by the biblical well, and were to ask you to drink from the jug, and you were kind enough so as to allow them to drink from the jug, what would you do with the rest of the water? So says the Beis Halevi, you'd pour it out. Because at the end of the day, I'm not bringing home, I don't know who this guy is. I'm fine with the chesed, but I'm going to just put his lips on the jug. I don't know who he is. I'm not going to bring this water back home. The problem is if you pour out the water in the jug, that's offensive to the person who just drank. So whereas that it's true you did a beautiful chesed by giving the strange person to drink, now you're going to pour out the rest of the contents. You're going to pour it out on the ground. So obviously, what's the message? The message, listen, guy, I don't know who you are, but I'm not bringing that water that your lips touched into my house. I don't know who you are. I don't know what diseases you have. I don't know what your cleanliness standards are. So the logical thing would be, of course, do chesed. But listen, whatever you don't drink, I'm going to pour out. But that would be offensive. There's only one good resolution to this. What's the good resolution? Says the Beis Halevi, this is incredible. The only resolution is if you go ahead and you offer, after the guy takes the drink from the jug, you offer them to give the camels to drink. Where are you giving the camels to drink from, says the Beis Halevi? From the rest of the jug. You could then take the rest of the water in the jug and pour it out into the trough for the camels. This way, again, you don't have to bring the rest of the water home because that would be a little bit weird to bring that water home that this individual drank from. But you're not going to pour it on the ground because pouring on the ground would ultimately be offensive to the individual. But if you pour it into the trough, that way, again, you're servicing the animals, additional chesed. You don't have to bring the water home, which would just be strange, but you also don't have to offend the individual. And so what Rivka Imenu does is something amazing. This was the test. This is very important because, says the Beis Halevi, nowhere do the laws of Chesed mandate that you have to water someone's flock of camels. It just, but this didn't come with one camel. It came with a bunch of camels. They were laden with all of Avraham Avinu's riches. He came with a whole, who knows how many camels, but it's certainly plural. It's certainly more than two. Came with a bunch of camels. An expectation that someone's going to water your camels? What are you talking about? Says Beis Halevi, no, that's not it. Eliezer is looking for someone who does chesed with chachma. Someone who does chesed with wisdom. Because the truth is true chesed. This happens all the time. People do chesed and they're so horribly offensive in their chesed. They're so horribly offensive. They don't realize it. They're doing something good, but they say something that makes a person feel so little, right? Or they say something that demeans a person, or they do so with such a sense of arrogance that, look at me, I'm doing something so special. It has to be chesed with chachma, chesed with wisdom. And ultimately, again, little Rivka, young Rivka, before she's Rivka Imenu, young Rivka passes this test with flying colors because it says Beis Halevi something amazing. You know what Rivka did, by the way? Rivka went even further. So Rivka goes ahead. Eliezer comes over to her. He asks her to drink from the jug. She says, sure. And what does she do? She goes ahead and she gives him to drink. And then what does she do? She pours the remaining water into the trough of the camels. Then she says, you know what? Let me get more water. Because Rivka was concerned that maybe Eliezer is going to realize that the reason she poured the water out for the camels is not because she cares about the camels, but because she doesn't want to go ahead and bring the water home. So what does she do? She makes a few more trips to the well to get some more water for the camels. This way, Eliezer shouldn't think that at the end of the day, pouring the water for the camels was her way out of not having to bring the water home after he had drunk from the jug. So young Rivka has this incredible intuitive understanding of how you do chesed. So first of all, this idea by itself is just so profound. Because unfortunately, you know, sometimes, like the worst machlokes, it's actually very interesting, sometimes the worst machlokes comes out of chesed. It's fascinating to see, right? That sometimes the worst machlokes comes up with people who are engaged in trying to help and trying to do good for others. It's because the satan is always found wherever there is the greatest potential for kedusha. But chesed is about chesed with chachma. You have to do chesed in a way that doesn't make a person feel like a recipient, that doesn't make a person feel demeaned, that doesn't make a person feel less, but rather, again, builds a person up. And young Rivka on her own, by the way, I want to point out, this was not the chim chinuch from her mother and her father. This was not the chinuch. This is why Avraham Avinu said, go to my family. Because somehow, some way, chesed was in their genetic code. How Avraham Avinu knew this, it must have been that he developed elements of chesed even as a boy, even from his mishpacha. Go back to my mishpacha. Chesed is embedded in our genetic code. And isn't this incredible? Young Rivka, it's not just that fact that she was willing to give a strange man something to drink. But she understood how to do chesed with chachma. She understood how to do chesed with this. She understood how to get the job done. But at the same time, still maintain this feelings of self of the other individual. Now we understand what's happening over here. When do you do chesed with chachma? When do you do chesed with wisdom? So I think the answer is you do it when you truly desire chesed. You see, people often do chesed in two different kinds. A lot of us, we do chesed because I'm a Jew. I have to do chesed. Do I want to do chesed? I don't know. Like, if I had the choice, maybe I'd rather be spending my time doing something else. Maybe something for me. Maybe a bit more focused on the self. But I do it, of course, because I have to, which, by the way, is an incredible accomplishment. To do something you don't really want to do, but do it anyway because you know that it's right, is an incredible accomplishment. But when you do something because you have to do it out of a sense of duty, but there's not a desire, often what ends up happening is you do what you have to do in order to get the job done, but not really all that much more. Whereas when you do something with desire, when you do something ultimately again with a chifetz, with a desire, with a want, see, figure out not only how to get the job done, but how do I get the job done in the best way possible. That's the power of desire. So if we bring this all together, when David HaMelech says, "Ubisoraso im ki im bisoras Hashem cheftso," why does David HaMelech have to focus on desire? Because David HaMelech understood that when you desire God, when you desire Torah, to learn Torah, to live Torah, then suddenly again you do things in a dramatically different fashion. It's no different. Think about this in anything in life. Most of us have two categories of activities in life. The things I want to do, and the things I have to do. And if we ask ourselves, which category of things do you generally do a better job with? I would venture to say most of us do a better job on the things we want to do than the things we have to do. So David HaMelech says it's the same thing in the world of Ruchnius. If you do things because you have to, that's incredible. And I want to point out again, that is an incredible accomplishment, because to overcome a desire to not do something and do it because it's the Ratzon Hashem is an incredible accomplishment. But there's something even greater. Develop desire. Develop desire. And the more you develop desire, the better job you will do. Rivka doesn't just do chesed because she wants to do chesed. Because she has to do chesed. Because the truth is, Rivka Imenu doesn't have to do chesed. That's not an expectation in her family. That's not an expectation in her community. She does it because she desired it. And when you desire to do something, you do the best job possible. So if we bring this all together, in Pasuk Beis, David HaMelech introduces us to the next step. Again, the goal is the same. I think the goal is going to remain the same for the next couple of weeks. Right? To lead an Ashrei life. Isn't that what we want? I just want to lead an Ashrei life. Step one in an Ashrei life, Sur Meira. That was Pasuk Aleph. Avoid evil. Avoid all the negative things in life. That's step one. Step two, you have to engage in dynamic, meaningful activity. Remember again, not enough to have a good heart, not enough to have good feelings, not enough to have good intentions. You must engage in positive, dynamic activity. But lest you think that positive, dynamic activity is only meaningful if you accomplish something of significance, ultimately, again, the Gemara comes along and tells us the Kadosh Baruch Hu gauges success by effort, not success by result. But why does David HaMelech have to bring up the need to desire? Why isn't it enough just to say, O Besorah, so yehageh yomam balayla? Just say again, engage in dynamic activity, engage in Torah, learn Torah, live Torah, engage Kadosh Baruch Hu day and night. Why do I have to desire it also? We generally don't try to mandate or manage emotion. So two reasons. Number one, says the Radak, because if you desire something, you'll take an opportunity to have it anytime you can. So if you desire Torah, learning Torah, living Torah, engaging in the Kadosh Baruch Hu, then whenever you do have the time, yom and laila, by day and by night, doesn't mean every free moment you have, because there are other things I like to do also, But any time you do have being by yom, by day and by night, if you desire HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you desire Torah, you desire to learn Torah, to live Torah, then when you have time by day and by night, you will seize those opportunities. Because you could see the true hierarchy of a person's values in how they spend their free time. What do you do when you have those moments by day, those moments by night? And how you use that time ultimately, again, demonstrates what's important to you. If you desire HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then when you have the time, you'll find a way to engage Him. And again, the Beis HaLevi teaches us, because where there's desire for something, you do it in the best way possible. If you desire chesed, like a Rivka Imenu, then not only will you do chesed, but you'll do chesed with chachma. And plug that into everything. If you desire learning, then you'll maximize your opportunities. If you desire living Torah, if you desire mitzvos, then you'll look for even greater opportunities than the ones which are required of you. When you desire something in life, then you maximize those opportunities. So therefore, David HaMelech teaches us, step two in leading an Ashrei life is, number one, engage in dynamic activity, but cultivates a sense of desire. And the truth is, they're really related. Because, of course, now the million-dollar question with this, I'll conclude, is how do you cultivate desire? How do you cultivate desire? So the truth is, it's a very simple answer, but it's an answer that no one likes. The way you cultivate desire is through dynamic activity. The more you do, the more you want. This is true in terms of marriage. How do you create the desire? I don't just mean like physical desire, but how do you create desire in terms of wanting a strong relationship with another individual? Do for them. Engage. How do you create a desire for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Engage. Do so. They're really connected. Interestingly enough, in the Pasuk, desire comes before dynamic activity. Right, he says, "Kim b'taras Hashem cheftzo." You desire Torah, and then you engage in Torah day and night. But in fact, in life, because remember, David HaMelech is in a perfect world, you desire and then you do. But in the actual world, you do and then you desire. The goal ultimately, again, is to become desirous of learning Torah, desirous of living Torah, desirous of having a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the only way to create that desire, the only way to create that passion, is to engage. The more you do, the more you desire. The more you desire, the more you'll take advantage of your opportunities. The more you desire, the more you will do all of your beautiful dynamic actions with greater chachma, greater thought, and greater sensitivity. And when I put all of that together, David HaMelech says, I'm one step closer to actualizing an Ashrei life. We'll stop over here for today, and we'll pick up Emirat Hashem, no surprises, with Kapitel Aleph next week. Emirat, I'm just going to spend a little bit longer on it, because the next pasuk of Kayach Keisha Su, Apal Gimayim, will have some beautiful and incredible insights to that as well. We will, Emirat Hashem, get on to other Kapitlach as well. Wishing everyone a wonderful day and a great rest of the week.